Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hey, people. This is Aram. I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening to and sharing our first Dead Ghost production, Replay. We're busy planning out new productions and gearing up for season 4 of our Dungeons & Dragons podcast, Kill Every Monster.
Izzy, I want to know, when did the pull start?
I don't have a great sense of time, necessarily. I'm out on my own. My kids are grown-ish, by which I mean they're 2 and able to eat on their own. My mate has rolled out, and for the last couple of units of time, I've been on my own enjoying life. And then maybe just 2 or 3 mornings ago, I woke up to this sensation of almost a physical, like you've said, pulling. Like something inside of me was trying to move, almost like a muscle spasm. Just this need to gotta go.
While recording Replay, Alex and I spoke to writer Kieran Gillen and artist Stephanie Hans to find out what went into making Die the role-playing game. You can watch a video of this interview at patreon.com/deadghostpro.
Stephanie, do you want to introduce yourself for people who, for some reason, don't know you?
Well, I'm Stephanie Hans. I'm a comic book artist. I started my career in 2005 in France, and then went on being a cover artist in France, and then cover artist in the US, so mostly for Marvel, but around the comic scene for ever since. It's been 13 years, I guess. And even though I work mostly as a freelance artist, I also am a comic book creator for Image with Kieran Gillen on a title called Die, which is now finished, but we also did the RPG that goes with it because it's technically what we call an isekai, so of course we had to do it.
The first question I would have, would you recommend that people read the comic first or read the TTRPG book first?
I would say the comic first, of course. For me, at least.
That's how I did it as well. I read the whole comic first and then picked up the book.
Yeah, I think you're more enticed or you're more involved in creating the story once you read it the first time, I think. And it makes the process so much easier, you know. You don't have to explain it that much if you already read it. So it's very organic.
It also seems to heavily underline the idea that these are narrative games, that the story is paramount. That's the most important part of this. It's the story. The mechanics are great and a lot of fun, but the story comes first. And I think reading the comic first does underline that.
I think for Kieran, at least, it's a lot about creating your own story. Like every story is a real story, is canon, as for him. And he has this thing about like helping people creating their own universe. It's very caring.
It is a game that focuses heavily on world building and collective world building, where everyone's ideas not only matter, but have weight and impact on not just the story, but how the world operates. And that gives a lot of power to the players that normally would cede that power to the GM. And that was a very appealing part for me.
For me, you know, RPGs have always been like this. Like the first time I ever played, I think it was La Compagnie Impériale in French from Warhammer. And I found this connection with storytelling, like, you know, the same way as when you're a kid and you pretend you're like, let's say, a pirate. And it's like suddenly you're really a pirate and the classroom becomes a boat or whatever. And, you know, there is such a thin line between reality and storytelling when you're a kid. And playing RPGs brought this feeling back, like thinning the line between realities for me. So I think like the RPG aims to do that a lot, which is something I like a lot about it. It's very difficult to let go this thing of being able to create a world with just word and a good company.
But like, I remember seeing an interview with you about how, like, in the creation of the comic and then eventually with the game, your contribution was asking a lot of questions and like working a lot on the designs and like building around, like, you didn't work as much with the word side as much as you did with like creating the frame and the like the actual visual design. Has there been any like additional contributions that you have made since, or has it remained very much that distinct line between you and Kieran?
No, it's always been like this. I am very happy to be the builder of the maps that Kieran gives me in a way. They give me stories and ideas, and I just run with them usually. For me, everything makes sense in a way, like even the weirdest concepts, and you know, I always try to go through them very genuinely.
To what extent did you have creative freedom in, I'm thinking especially in character designs, like was there anything that you had a very specific idea for that you carried all the way through the book, or was that also a conversation?
You know, I think the main one that represents more what I did, it was really Chuck, because basically I had this idea that it was the 90s and each character, they would have the paragons would have designs would be influenced by pop culture, like elements of pop culture from their own time. So for Chuck, for me, it was George Michael, and you know, for the Faith era, and yeah, like if you look at it, it's so evident. And but of course, he wouldn't use them now. And so I just did it. The only one we butted heads a bit with Kieran was Ash. Because at first, like I had a concept way more influenced by Eddie the Head, with like, and it was like, no, she has to be like royalty. So this one is the only one I had to do several times.
Yeah.
But really, it was the only one.
He had a real firm idea of what he wanted Ash to be like.
More like he had a lot of idea about what he didn't want.
Right. No, I know that. I know that well. I always like, know what I don't
this
like.
This is not right. It's like, okay, what do you want? No. It just, this isn't right.
Not this.
It has to be royalty. It's like, yes.
Speaking of the art and the art direction, there are some strong queer themes in this book. I'm thinking of the dictator in the TTRPG book, who was basically Freddie Mercury in Tom of Finland leather, which I love. It's such a great choice. How were you just like, these are strong 80s and 90s queer themes, and that's how I'm going to orient this? Like, what was your process in involving queer stories in this tale?
You know, I always treat the words of my writer with as much love and respect as I treat any word from any writer. There is basically no difference for me from treating, you know, I will always like love my character as much as any other that I would develop. More so this one, because there are mostly at least half mine, you know? No, I never had any questioning about this, you know?
It just seems to fit so naturally in the world. It just seems to be part of the fabric of everything. There's not a real call out. It's just accepted. And I love that choice personally.
Yeah. Were there any influences that you weren't able to include, either because of time constraints or because of just like the character design didn't quite fit in like the final draft or something?
No, I think everything went in. Maybe the thing I was the proudest is my main influence in art has always been Billy Bean, even though it's quite far away from what I do, but it's this beautiful Art Nouveau painter, like from the early 30s, maybe, Russian, beautiful, very elegant line art. I emulate his style during the flashbacks. You know, the flashbacks are very different in that. Not all of them. They are all treated differently depending on the period they are from. But when we are in storytelling time, it's Billy Bean style.
The comic and the ink almost feel like a character. They feel like part of the engine of Die. Like there's some mechanics to it that actually slot in. There's something ominous about everything, even when it's beautiful. There's just this feeling you get from it. When it's the same feeling I get from the book, as if there's some entity willing it into existence, willing it to be seen, willing these characters to the front of the page. And I think that that's just miraculous you all pulled that off. That not only is the story so interesting, but like the feeling that it can generate its own stories, that it's hungry and wants you to read them. I just dug that a lot. The whole feeling was very kind of like, you know, you're reading it, but you're in a dark room and looking behind you, like making sure everything's still right.
Hey, there are a lot of eyes in the designs as well. Yeah. So it makes sense to have just like, oh, something's watching all the time.
I think we didn't really plan it at first and became very obvious that there was something with the eyes, like you know, you have the Grandmaster, and then you have several other characters with like hidden eyes or like just, you know, and sometimes stories, they just become what they want to do, to be by themselves, you know, they shape up. You have your idea, and then they have their own lives.
There's also so many things in Dungeons and Dragons about spells that like, here's a floating invisible eye. Here's an eye that does this. Here's a watching post. To me, it was like, what if there's this extra layer? What if there are all these watchers of the game that we don't know about? What if all these eyes represent someone watching them play this game? Or maybe an audience, like the way that we're running the game is that they were a group that played the game over the radio. So it was almost like a podcast. People were listening. So where are the listeners represented? Where are their eyes and ears? And that's how I'm actually pulling that in.
That's actually very clever.
You guys give us a lot of hooks. There's a lot to pull from in this game.
It's like so very little that we have to do in terms of adding. It's more of a, okay, yep, how do we make this one work with this bit?
Right. How do we twist what's been given to us? How do we play with all the toys in the box? Yeah.
I mean, I guess this is a very, very basic question following on from what we were just saying, but you've mentioned before that covers are your preferred way of like doing comics, but is there any moment from the actual comic series that you would call your favorite, like any page layout or any narrative moment that you were able to draw?
Yeah, I think from the whole book, the whole series, the issue 3 was my favorite.
Okay.
The one in trenches.
That was good.
I think it was the one I was the most involved in, or maybe, I don't know, there is something about it, about the pace of it and everything that's happening out of frame too. Yeah, I think that's my favorite.
I love out of frame world building. It's my favorite things because it really shows you pieces you're not going to see otherwise. And I do really love that book because you're very much coming in off this Jumanji, Where's Waldo kind of like fantasy-esque joy. And then all of a sudden you ground it with the concept of fantasy war so firmly, there wasn't a better way I could think of to say your choices have consequences and not just for you. This world is living and breathing beyond you. It exists when you step off the stage, and whatever you do affects them as well. They're not just holograms. These are people living their lives.
Yeah, it's a very bittersweet issue, actually.
Made the whole world a lot scarier.
Yeah,
that's true. And also visually, I was very happy about it. Like with minimal decor and just now the first time Karen sent me the issue, it wasn't even supposed to be in the trenches. I was like, I come from the north of France, so I actually like it's. I was actually living quite near from the Ligne Maginot. And it's been a subject of nightmares for me when I was young, because in that part of France, they sent you, like at least 40 years ago when I was young, they used to send you with the school to visit the remains. And it was horrifying for me. After a while, you get used to it, which is another weird thing happening when you see too much of a horror, horror things. But, I think maybe that was why I was so implied in this issue.
Yeah, it is amazing how those scars, even the physical scars of the landscape, remain to this day. How devastating that war truly was. Yeah.
Oh yeah, sure. You know that in North of France, in this part of France, you cannot actually dig in the hole more than something like 60 centimeters or something like that, because there might be still some old bombs.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and each time there is a storm and the trees are falling, you can always find some in the
Oh, the roots rip the bombs up and take them to the surface?
Bones, wow. Bombs, like, yeah. You keep getting that in Italy as well. They keep trying to like expand metropolitan underground tram lines, and it's like, nope, we have to stop. We just found another Roman site.
Oh yeah, they have to stop like every 50 feet.
Have that too.
It's like, nope, can't do that. Nope, can't do that. they finally come up with a solution, which is just like build a little like free museum in the station.
That's brilliant. What a great idea. I love that.
I really did.
There's also in England where they had to keep redirecting the tube because they kept hitting plague pits. So they had to go around the plague pits because they could release the plague again. It stays there and stays active. Yeah, they could literally release the plague again by digging into the plague pit. So they sent the train around the plague pit. Let me ask you this. Out of the characters in the comic, out of the 6 main characters, which is your favorite? Which is your least favorite? Like, if you had to deal with these people in real life, who would you like and who would you not like?
Well, you know, I was telling about Chuck earlier. Chuck is certainly my least and most favorite character.
Yeah.
You know, he certainly is very fun to be around, but maybe not always.
Not
you
always.
Know, he's like a nice person to party, but you will never be able to have a decent conversation with him.
Yeah.
And if you need him, he's going to be like out of the door.
He's always going to be aloof. He's never going to be relied on. He'll be there for the fight, but otherwise, yeah. You know, I also love how that character starts out like fun and then, oh, quickly annoying. And then, oh, there's a much deeper trauma under that that explains so much. I love that arc with him.
The thing with Chuck is also the character I identify the most with.
Really?
Yeah. For a long time, I thought I was the dictator, but in the end, I was Chuck.
That's a great arc.
There is a big. When I was a child, I was very socially awkward. Like I am somewhat neurodivergent, so I guess that explains a lot of things. But the thing is, I used to pretend that people didn't exist. It was my way of functioning because I was too scared about real people. And right now I'm at 500. Like I can actually accept the existence of 500 real persons in the world, and the rest are non-playing characters.
Have you heard of the 300 monkeys rule?
Oh, no, which one is it?
So there's this idea of thought where researchers figured out, on average, that a person can hold 300 people in their head. That 300 people can matter to them, whether they're friends or acquaintances or relatives or people online or work people. Once you get to 300, your bucket's full. They're just more people at that point. They can't matter as much because you could only keep that about 300, maybe 500 people in your head.
Yeah, but yeah, the thing is, with the 500, it really makes sense because, you know, you've already lived this story, but once you go like very far away, let's say in a yurt in Siberia, you will always meet somebody you already know. Always. It never happens. Like, there is a reason for that. And also, the non-playing characters are very easy to identify because they're always in the same place and they always tell the same stories. And you know people like this.
Yes. Yes. I know the bartender who's got 3 stories and tells them to every single person who walks in. Absolutely.
So we're all Chuck, and we all know a Chuck. Yes,
we are all both Chuck and know of Chuck. Yes, Chuck is a duality.
You know, each time I tell this theory, there is always somebody who asks, what if I'm a non-playing character? It's like, I don't know about that.
I actually love the idea that the NPC characters draw so much attention in this world, that they have their little personal lives, that and they have their interactions that exist beyond the characters. It's one of the things I tell up and coming DMs or players who want to be DMs. Like, if you really, really want to root a world and make it feel real, give them lives, give them decisions. Absolutely. Why are they running this in? Why is this in here? Just a little throwaway of dialogue helps. And the best part about die is I don't have to come up with it as the game master. I can be like, you tell me what the bar is called. You tell me why it's here. You feed this information in and I'll just add one more thread to the tale. It's such a refreshing way to play games as opposed to the top-down heavy DM, which is almost then villainized in the comic. Like, not only should you not play this way, but this method of play can be villainous very easily. And I thought that was a really interesting way to talk about the process of playing a game with other people. Was there a lot of talk about like how you can not only get the idea of this game across, but maybe how you can teach people how to play better games?
No, I think Kieran did a very good job at that. Like from the beginning, explaining how to like, you know, brainstorm and create your own backstory. But again, I think that's the main thing about the RPG. You know, being able to create a universe. And I think the most clever thing in all this is playing like returning character with already a dynamic. You already know. Like I think for me, especially as a socially awkward person, the worst thing for me in every RPG has always been the introduction scenes. Like, hello, I'm real. Please talk to me. That's
and my
so
parents
horrible.
Died and I am now tragic and I served a god of death and he tells me to kill other people.
But also, I'm in AP chemistry. You know, that's the kind of vibe you get. Yeah.
Have you, Stephanie, played Die since it came out, or did you only play in like early testing?
No. We played it. You know, the last time we played it was like before, of course, when we created the new Paragons for the storyline of the RPG.
So the Stephanie in the manual is you. Stephanie playing Morgan.
Yeah. Maybe.
Even in some of the art for Morgan. Morgan kind of looks like you, which I dig. I like that quite a lot.
But yeah, we were with Adam, like Kieran and people for Woman Descartes and Woman Rook and Descartes. And, you know, we actually designed our characters. Like,
and they got the Stephanie Hands to help them with the art for their own custom characters, which is what...
Yeah, that's nice, that's right?
It is pretty nice.
Are you kidding me? That's the best.
Like, I've had my players design some of my master characters.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is, which I love dearly, and I have it above my desk, but it's not a Stephanie Hands custom-made character design.
Yeah.
That was really fun, actually.
So in that, I guess, in that, not really test game, but in that early version of the game, you played the Neo. You played Morgan, who was a Neo. What's your actual favorite paragon? Like, is the Neo your favorite paragon, or do you have another favorite?
I don't know. You know, I think the question... for me is like, what would be your superpower? Like if you wanted to have one. For me, because like for the same reason I always explained, but I always wanted to know what was in the mind of people, because I have trouble reading people. And so of course I would love to be a dictator, but I don't think that would be a good idea though.
I'm also neurodivergent, and the idea of being able to read people's minds, on one hand, very appealing, because it would make a lot of things easier. On the other hand, I do worry it would make me worse. I would just get more paranoid and more upset and spiral more, because instead of like reducing all my fears, I'd be like, oh no, they were all accurate. People think terrible things all the time. Yeah, I wouldn't want to know.
And then you would have the responsibility of changing those emotions, and you would make it so much worse for everyone.
I couldn't handle it.
Yes.
It's
terrible.
It's the one character where, of course, you have to be real careful with your players, but like as a person, as a human being, I would not do well with that power. I know that would corrupt me. I know I'd be weak. And that's the one that scares me the most, frankly, both as a GM and a player. That one frightens me.
No, that's true. That's absolutely true.
Just to have a mechanic where if they roll, they succeed. Like, the voice works. It just works. It may not work how you intended it. It may do bad things, but the voice always works. And to give a player that kind of story mechanism where if you pull the trigger, something will always happen is such a refreshing way to play a game. As opposed to, oh, roll the dice, guess the big scary voice didn't work. Like, that would take so much power away from it.
If it doesn't work, it works too well.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. If it fails, it's because it worked too well.
That's absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
So I guess the paragons that you have, like, as the iconics in the book. So Morgan, Alex, Hestia, like all of those that were like the paragons that you played as players. The designs that we mentioned earlier, Tom of Finland as the dictator, how did you, like, where were you drawing inspiration for those character designs? So like the actual iconics that show up rather than the example characters?
No, like for this one, like most of us had we had this scene where we all describe ourselves at the moment where the powers activate. So we all had more or less something already. So I just had a bit of that, you know, like just I for example, for the new dictator, there was this thing about the glass, like he always has a glass. So this is, but I also wanted to keep like something like a, I don't know, a link with the new design and the former design. Yeah. That's also why it's also open. And, you know, yeah, I always try to find something that links them together. So in the end, it's a mix of what they have, what they bring, and what the books, the former book that I wrote beforehand.
It really is like the game and the comics are just a conversation with each other. Yeah. It's like you said that you would recommend people read the comic first. And when I talk to players, it's like, you don't have to have read the comic. It won't spoil the game. And if you've read the game, it won't spoil the comic. Like, feel free to go either way.
Mm-hmm. But it will be faster to get the mechanics.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I was much more centered in the world by reading the comic first. And I got a really good, especially when it underlines the Jumanji aspect of it, that these are real broken people that are rewarded for sharing and exposing and giving and feeding Dai what it needs. And then to have it be just, there was the way that it was presented, I felt was both instructive of how to play this game and how to play a game. There was a really good balance of both. You were able to show people an example of play that is dangerous and scary and exposes trauma, but is also underlines that it keeps everyone safe. There's even moments in the comic where the characters have a big fight and then you show them checking in with each other afterwards, talking it out, finding the solutions. They don't leave things hanging. They usually face it head on right there with a couple storylines that we find out in the end that they hid back for personal reasons. But for the most part, they deal with these issues right up front. It's never a pretty, it never gets combed over in this world. You don't hide things in this world. Everything comes to the surface, whether you like it or not.
Thank you. That's what I was going to add. Yeah.
Yeah.
One question that I have is with the newly announced and revealed scenarios work, like we know that you're still working on Dai in some capacity, and we know that you and Kieran have talked about like potentially revisiting the world of Dai in comics form as well. I can see the smile. No one else will see the smile that just happened there, but I'm just going to describe it for the listeners. Is that something, obviously you have enjoyed Dai, you've talked about enjoying working with Dai, clearly you have enjoyed your time working with Kieran. Is that something that you would be happy to revisit? Is it something that you would, let's leave it at that. Is it something that you would be happy to revisit? The world of Dai as a comic?
Of course, like I think there are a lot of things that are still we still have to explore. There are a lot of numbers that haven't been explored by the Paragons, and you know, also I have a lot of love for this story. So yeah, it makes sense to go back there, even though you know, so I have also to accept that the characters have finished their storylines, and even if we go back, maybe they won't come back.
Yeah.
Or maybe they will.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Mm. And maybe there are other characters that can go back and explore the world. Doesn't have to be.
It's always been a struggle for me to let the story go, you know, like, but yeah, it's finished, but I want to know what's happening. Like, is there an option to check, like to have news from people that you love in the stories, like once a year or something? Hey, what's happening? You know, that would be great.
Because I guess we just need Kieran on call and just say, hey, Kieran, what's Chuck doing? Okay, he's okay. Okay, he's good. Okay.
Good deal.
Thank you for joining us for the launch of Dead Ghost Productions. We are a queer-run and owned studio and a proud member of the Realm Network.
Keep up to date with Replay and all of our projects by following us on Twitter at Dead Ghost Pro. Find all of our social media and all the shows we produce at deadghostpro.com.
Every 5 minutes, a transplant candidate dies while waiting for a compatible heart, liver, or kidney. Imagine a technology that could provide those life-saving transplant organs for a high price, and imagine what a company would do to monopolize that technology. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists unlocks this holy grail of medicine by reverse engineering the genomes of all mammals, creating an animal with organs perfectly suitable for human transplantation. They envisioned a docile herd animal, but one team member had another, darker vision. This ancestor is anything but docile. The team's work spawns something big, something evil, something very, very hungry. Ancestor is a complete serialized fiction podcast by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler, with all episodes available. Binge the entire story now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This show is produced and edited by Dead Ghost Productions. Find out more about us and all the shows we make at deadghostpro.com.